Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher and a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so what I do on this podcast is I share ideas and strategies, I tell stories, I share some of my epic fails, and sometimes I interview people, which is what I did today. I had a chance to talk to Dominique Foster about this idea of having a creative classroom. A little bit about Dominique. She is an educator, community organizer, and content creator. She currently teaches pre-K at Friendship Public Charter School's Below Pierce Academy, and she has more than 13 years of experience teaching young learners. With extensive training and experience at Montessori, Reggio Emilio, International Baccalaureate, and creative curriculum approaches to learning, Foster pulls from each of these to create an engaging and inclusive classroom learning environment for children of all backgrounds. The consistent growth and success of her students has been well documented, as she has scored above the national threshold for 5 years on the Classroom Assessment Scoring System, or Class Observation Tool. In 2019, Foster received a nearly perfect score on the Class Observation, placing her among the top early childhood educators in the country. In fact, in 2022, this year, she's the DC Teacher of the Year for Washington, DC. Foster earned her Bachelor's of Science in Organizational Communication from Xavier University and is currently back at Xavier working on her Master's of Education in Montessori Education. When she is not in the classroom, she spends her time enjoying hot yoga classes, trying new dishes, and creating memories with family and friends. So without further ado, here is Dominique Foster. All right, Dominique, I am wondering, just as we get started, would you be willing to share your story about how you became a teacher, where you are now, and just that larger journey of getting to where you are right now?
Sure. Well, first, John, I would just like to say thank you so much for having me on. I'm super excited just to talk to another creative. And my journey is, you know, I would say pretty simple, but I've really just allowed my interests and my passion to lead me. So, you know, during my undergrad years, majored in communications, but I really loved children. So for work study, I worked at the Montessori all 4 years. And so it was really fun. I really enjoyed it. It was very diverse. A lot of the professors' children, students who spoke 2 and 3 languages, you know, so very fun. And looking to move to the DC area after graduating, I struggled to find a job in communications, and decided, all right, well, let me go back to what I know and worked at Head Start for a year. And you know, man, I really didn't think that I would enjoy, cause I had always worked with, you know, pre-K students up to, you know, second, third grade, and they, for a little while, threw me with the toddlers and even the babies. And I'm like, oh, no, no, I'll do it. And I just fell in love. I just loved it. So, you know, even just being in that daycare setting, I look back and I really enjoyed it. DC, somebody in DC was hiring some early childhood teachers. And I had a friend who was already out here, and she spoke very highly of me and my passion and all of that. So she hired me over the phone. I was still in Ohio. And and that was around 2009. And I said, all right, well, I'll stay in early childhood for a while, stay in education for a while, but I am going to transition on. You know, I really love, you know, communications. And here I am. I'm still here about 14 years later, 13, 14 years later. So I have, like I said, allowed my passion and my love for anything in life to kind of, you know, be what drives me and what leads me. And I have such a great love for young learners. So this is where I've been.
So one of the things you're passionate about that we talked about before this interview is the need for creativity. And I'm curious, for you, where did that passion come from?
I think it came very organically. So I'm not sure growing up, I knew I was a creative, You know, there are some folks who, you know, you could see in art class, you know, and I think I was good enough at a little bit of everything. You know, I was a sports fanatic, so I love sports, love just interacting with people. So there's a lot of things that I could have been considered, you know, really good at, but I'm not sure if the creative or arts or, you know, things like that was one of them. And I think it wasn't until college that I started tapping into a lot of different things, and others started telling me, like, man, you are really good. You think very differently, you know, so not just very innovative. And I think between the two, the creativity and innovation and the classroom is really what often allows us to express ourselves creatively and innovatively. And that's probably also what has kept me in the space. So I'm not sure, I can't draw very well per se, you know, when you think of very creative or artsy people, but the images, I can see them, you know, I'm a visionary when it comes to different things. And so between my strengths and then finding others and connecting and partnering with them who are good at other things that I'm not as good at, oftentimes I can kind of bring those visions to life and to fruition.
Do you think there's any part of it? I mean, you mentioned childhood being into having all the different interests that you had and being a sports fanatic and stuff. Do you think there's any element of that that allowed you to develop some of the visualization and the problem solving strategies that are part of your creative style now?
Absolutely. And I think what my parents at least allowed me to do was just explore and experiment just with different things. And it really helps to create a very well-rounded child and person because then you do get to see what you are good at. If you've never had the opportunity to experience things, to try new things, all of those things help to shape and build on your confidence because it allows you to see, I do this well. I work well in, like, this is my lane. Even if there's other things that you are also passionate and good at, like, this is my thing. So undoubtedly, yeah, those experiences did.
So when you think about where you are now, you've been, could you share just a little bit about what the school is like, where you're teaching right now?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm at Friendship Low Pierce here in DC, Washington, DC. And, this is my eighth year at this campus. So I've been with Friendship for about 10 years. So worked at a few other campuses. I would say probably over 50% of the school would be considered low income, coming from low income homes. But overall, I would say probably even more than other schools that I've worked at, just the school culture, just, you know, again, the creativity and the abilities for the children to express themselves. I think the school does really, really well, which is one of the main reasons that I've stayed at this campus for so long. It's really just enjoyable just to see the children shine in the manner in which they do. And I think that this school does a really good job of, you know, building on students' interests and giving them a lot of autonomy. So, you know, I have 14 students this year, all African-American, beautiful Black children, which for the most part I've always had in my classrooms. And that's pretty much throughout the entire building.
When you think about this idea of giving them choice and autonomy, I'm curious if there were any aspects of your background in terms of, you mentioned working in a Montessori school before, having a communications background. Do you think any of those past experiences helped shape your ability in the current classroom to really empower students with that voice and choice?
Absolutely. I really appreciate starting at that Montessori, you know, really seeing how the children moved throughout that Montessori experience. So extremely independent, very expressive and vocal, just about their interests and things that they disliked, and how they would express that even to the teachers, or even, you know, to their parents as they were picking them up. So it really shifted and shaped how I view young learners, and how capable they are, not just with their abilities, with their hands, but with their voices, with their choices, with the way that they view things and make connections. It was so impressive for me. And children are children are children to me. So especially at this young age, you know, there's very few differences outside of maybe they've gotten to travel a little bit or they've gotten to really, it really doesn't matter. And I can tell you that because now I've been at a lot of different places and taught, you know, at many different schools and centers. So it was just nice to see how they moved. And yes, it has definitely helped to shape how I interact with my students and just view children in general and going into these spaces with them.
You know, it's interesting. I love that that's part of your school culture, that students have that autonomy, that they're engaged in creative work. One of the challenges I had as a middle school teacher in a Title I school, low income, was there was often the perception that like what the students that we had, what our students needed was more of the basics, back to basics, 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 basics. And then in other places they could have project-based learning, right? Like, oh, once you master the basics, then you can do project-based learning or inquiry-based learning or have creative opportunities. And there always seemed to me to be a certain level of classism and racism to those statements. Sure. Because it was not an accident that my student population was also, you know, 80% Latino and 15% African American. So it always felt like there was like, this style of pedagogy is for other students, but what our students need is worksheets, is more of this, back to basics. And it was always something that we had to battle. And so I'm curious, before getting into the big why and sort of how, have you had to face any of those perceptions, either in the community or people you've run into? And how would you push back against that?
Sure, yeah. And you see this often. And I've even seen it in some of the texts that have been required for grad school. And I had to call it out just last year. where I, you know, and I was shocked because, you know, this professor had been teaching this class, you know, for I don't know how long. So I was shocked that I was the first person to bring it to her attention. Like, hey, do you see in this text, the authors are literally saying, you know, for, and they said for Black children and, you know, others similar that, you know, this style of teaching wouldn't be good for them. And she was just so apologetic. And you know, I love, this is still one of my favorite professors. So I knew that she was totally unaware, that this was even in this text. So yes, I undoubtedly, have seen it. I've experienced it, especially as you say, teaching middle school students and high school students, and what many, people will feel like they need to, be successful and to close that achievement gap. But I've also even experienced it with parents, you know, and with people within their own homes, to where in their mind, they only know one way of excellence or one way of teaching or one way of knowing, you know, how to see how their children are growing. So if you're doing projects or you're doing these hands-on material, you know, it's like, no, that's not what I want. That's not what I want to see my child doing. I want workbooks. You know, I want something where I can look and see this is progress, or this is how they've mastered it. So yeah, we're continuing to have these conversations. This is still something that's ongoing. But there's a way to still show how children are growing and excellence in the classroom through project base, especially if you are intentional, then you should still see growth.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, the data, there's a lot of new research that's come out in the last 2 years, specifically about that, about how, you know, project-based learning and inquiry-based learning, and really, you know, there are different models, but all the same idea, right? What you described before, giving students autonomy, engaging them in creative work, meaningful, deeper learning, that actually does lead to gains in student achievement, right?
Sure. The language skills, the concept development. So there's a lot of data, a lot of documenting that can take place when you just let children learn, create, explore, investigate. And I don't mean young children. I'm talking all the way up. Because really, if you look at even how adults learn and how we enjoy learning, we don't like sitting through meetings, you know what I'm saying, and having to fill out a lot of these documents and a lot of writing. But if you give us some materials and put some things on the table where we have to collaborate, we have to discuss, we have to make something, then you'll see the room light up. So this is, we don't change from children on to adulthood. We all like to learn in similar creative ways.
You know, one of the things, so you talked a little bit about this, but, you know, getting students or getting parents to buy in, parents and guardians, family engagement. What are some practical strategies so that students' caregivers understand that vision for what you're going for? You know, what would you say to someone who says, you know, look, I'm attempting some of these things, but I'm getting some pushback, or I'm getting, you know, some of the family members are nervous about it. You know, what are some practical strategies that you would recommend that teachers try out?
Sure. Very practical. And I just love pictures and videos and documenting. Anyway, you have to show them. That really is one of the only ways. So outside of you talking to them, outside of you saying what amazing things are happening, you have to show them. And honestly, you have to document it from where you all started to honestly, you know, not even the end of the project, because for many of them, they never end. We continue to build upon. So show them that also, like, this is how the year started. And this is why we started here, because now look at where we are. And look at all of the different ways that we've been able to branch off into different things and intersecting, you know, the different subjects. So I think that if you document very well, then that is the best way to get the parents to buy in and show them, bring them along on that process with you, not just at the end where you show them, but they are seeing it as you are doing it, as your children are experiencing it. And then you bring a little bit of that home too. So let them at home add to the projects, add to the learning, not so much that they feel overwhelmed. And I don't send a lot of projects home because the parents end up having to do a lot of it, but just enough that's like, we need you to help us with bringing this, you know, to fruition, especially a lot of service projects, where we include the families or we include the community. So all of those things, if you show them, if you add them and let them be a part of the learning, then they'll buy in more.
So when you think about this idea of creativity and student autonomy, what do you think are the greatest values in the end, the net results of that style of teaching? So, you know, you kind of touched on this idea of it will increase student achievement, it will lead to academic progress. But beyond that, why is it important that teachers are incorporating that creative voice into their teaching?
Yeah, well, let's just start with, from what I've seen, the children just enjoy to learn. It's just more enjoyable. At the very, let's just take all of pedagogy and all of the deep stuff out. Honestly, they just enjoy it more.
Which also makes you enjoy it more, right?
I had this conversation today. Like, why wouldn't you, as a teacher, want to, you know, add more resources and bring in more people and create more experiences for the children to learn in all of these great ways, because it brings more joy into my life. I light up as they light up. I'm growing and learning as they grow and learn. This is why my teaching and the style of teaching and the material, all of that shifts and changes each year. So I can never teach these same lessons the same way, because I have a new group and because I've learned new things, and they'll ask new questions that makes me have to go back and say, okay, we're taking this a different direction this year, which means I need somebody who knows about this, or I have to at least research more. So it's just more enjoyable. And that's one piece of, that's the very surface level. But beyond that, I think that I also think, and I'm a strong believer, there is no just one way. So I do know that there are children that can be very successful in a very traditional, per se, environment where we are just, you know, doing workbooks and we are, you know, on the computers and we have the schedule and there's this open sequence and they're very high performing. And they might actually enjoy it because they just like a good challenge or they just like to do well or whatever the case may be. And they might not enjoy a super creative, hands-on, a lot of moving parts space. So I think there is a balance. I just think in any space, there should be some time allotted or at least in whoever is leading or teaching in their mind, they are allowing the students at some level or in some way express themselves beyond just the data and the workbooks and getting to this goal and preparing for the test. Where we just let our hair down, we use these materials, we see, you know, what happens, even if it's just at recess, you know what I mean? Somewhere. So, you know, that's really my thoughts on that. There is no one way, and I'm okay with that.
I love that idea of kind of the balance of it all, right? That it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's not that this is how it has to look 100% of the time. You know, there you can still have those traditional pieces that you bring in. You still do some direct instruction. You still have those types of things because, yeah, I mean, ultimately, if we want all students to succeed, it's going to have to be multifaceted, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You talked a little bit before we got on here about the role of the classroom space. And, you know, the name of this podcast is The Creative Classroom. And so I'm curious if you would be willing to share, where do you think the space comes into play in terms of having a creative classroom?
If we want to focus on a creative classroom space, then it's everything. It really, really is everything. So it helps to shape your lessons and your direction. So when we are creating the classroom space, there are some things that, of course, when we start, of course, the students, usually haven't even arrived. So there's some level of my interest that goes into, you know, creating the space or just thinking about my children from, you know, prior grades and prior years. Which I think as a teacher, you know, especially we spend a lot of hours in the school, you know, the students should know what you're interested in, and that should be a part of the space too. But beyond just setting up some basic things in the classroom, some basic spaces, maybe even some centers, common areas, it starts off pretty bare for me because once the students arrive, I will usually watch how they use whatever spaces and materials, how they start shifting furniture. And this is at 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, you know, because they soon learn like, oh, this is my space. This is not her space. This is mine. This is ours. We're sharing this. So looking at how they use the space, how they use the materials, where they like to learn things best. And then, of course, just asking them. And as we continue to build the classroom, we start to incorporate some, you know, very intentional and hands-on materials, images. So there's large posters of my students throughout the room, which taps into, you know, just their identity and representation and all of these different things. So it really, you use the children to help you. They teach you how, you know, this space should be created, and beyond that, how they learn. And how they want to learn. So that's why I said it's continuously shifting and changing. But I don't rely on just, you know, best practices or even what I want. A lot of this goes into the group of students that you have.
Yeah, I'm reminded when you share that of my own, when I was in the classroom, I did an activity as I was shifting into having more of kind of a maker space, you know, with centers, with a studio area and things like that.
Yeah.
And it was eye-opening to me. I had them do an activity where they colored in a map of the classroom of what they thought was theirs individually, what they think they thought belonged to the students and what they thought belonged to the teacher. And at this point, I was probably in my sixth year of teaching, is a while, okay. A long time ago. And it was eye-opening to me because the whiteboards, the whole space around the whiteboards belonged to me, according to them, over and over and over again. You know, I had already gotten rid of a teacher's desk. I didn't have that and this and that. But it was really eye-opening. We didn't have a seating chart, but they all believed that there was a space that belonged to them personally. You know, there was this whole thing.
Sure.
So I thought, something's got to change, you know? And so I started, you know, everything from having them doing, you know, brainstorming and ideation and problem solving, all this kind of stuff on the boards and changing it up, to when I'm doing some instruction, really being intentional about not centering it in the front, you know, that kind of stuff. And then it was really interesting. The end of the year, I had them do a map again of the classroom and to watch that change.
Yeah.
And that the default, the realization is the default for me was where I came from, right? In terms of my own schooling.
Sure.
And, you know, congratulating myself. I have no teacher desk, so I'm ahead of the curve. You know,
sure, yeah.
Oh my gosh, my own socialization mixed with theirs, the expectation of years of that. And so I'm curious, as you think about this really different way of thinking about the classroom space in terms of student ownership, what do you think ultimately, how does that change students' mindsets about the space, about the learning, about everything involved in your classroom when they believe that that space is theirs?
Sure. And I know you said you taught middle schoolers. It's a little different for me. Because, you know, I am, this is for many of them, their first school experience.
Yeah.
So they are much more open to asking, like, hey, even if, you know, they don't already feel like they own the space, they'll ask, like, hey, can we move this over and use this? You know, so they are very comfortable. Like, hey, I don't know what you planned on doing with this area, but we need it, you know, which is nice. So if you can help them at this young age, at the very beginning, you know, of their academic careers and learning experience, help them know, like, this is what school should look and feel like, where this is your space and whatever it is that you need, find it. Find those resources to help you be successful, to help you finish this task. It's really beautiful. And I had a conversation with one of my coworkers. Like I said, I've been here. I believe this is the eighth or ninth year of this campus. And he said recently, you know, this group is special. This group of students, and they're so wonderful. He was like, no, this is the group. And I said, no, mm-mm. You know, certainly even thinking academically. I said, no, it's not them. And I started, you know, explaining some of my groups who are in fifth grade now and reminding him of those students. I said, it's me. I have changed. I have shifted and adjusted how I teach and how I even create the classroom spaces. And you all are now seeing, you're getting to see the results of that. But honestly, even how much I allow them to own the space and be much more independent. So it's not as robotic and not as organized. And, you know, so for them, I've always been that creative teacher. But I just think I've shifted in what that looks like and feels like for an early learner.
So when we think about it, you know, I'm imagining if there's someone who, you know, is listening to this and maybe they're teaching, you know, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, they're thinking, you know, this sounds great, but I'm really curious, what does it look like? I'm wondering if you would just give us kind of a little bit of a walkthrough, like, what does a day in your classroom look like?
Yeah. Let me start by saying, and I talked with my TA about this today, just even about read alouds and my students love, they love a good book. They love every portion of the day, morning meeting. I think more than any other year, we have created centers that are so engaging and so just phenomenal for these young learners. That's all they want to get to. And they are literally begging us, please, please, can we go to centers? It is just beautiful to watch. So morning meeting, it's high energy. It's not long, 15 minutes. You know, students are leading a lot of the learning. We're usually focusing on some skill, you know, of course, whether it's rhyming, whether it's name writing, whether it's, you know, numeracy, whatever it is. And then, of course, something that ties into the theme. So very fun. But of course, the read alouds, I will buy a lot of my own. I do like a read aloud that really ties into whatever it is that we're learning, something new that we discussed. We're usually doing some type of service project. But of course, centers is the highlight of the day. And we spend a lot of time into centers. I really love this unit we're in. We're talking about bodies. And when you think of young learners, you think of head, shoulders, knees, and toes, which is great. And of course, we discuss emotions and things like that as well. But if you look in the center of my classroom, there is a table and there is a de-articulated skeleton. So all 206 bones, maybe a few less, all 206 bones just on the table. And on the floor, there is a life-size skeleton printout. So laminated, glued down to the floor, and thinking about skills for pre-K. So we're talking about matching, we're talking about shapes, you know, we're talking about counting, sequencing, one-to-one. How much can you incorporate those skills just into the skeleton in these bones? So they're matching. They're matching, trying to see, this is the femur. For the most part, they know most of the bones now. We've learned a song. And now they're saying things like, you know, one of my students, I broke my patella. you know, but that's so great. That's like, oh my gosh. Like, this is crazy. They know the skeletal system. And it's like, this is amazing. And this is very still age appropriate. So they're matching. They're like, oh, no, this femur is upside down. You know what I mean? And then we have the vertebrae. And so then they're matching them and they know it starts big and then they get a little bit smaller. So big and small, you know what I'm saying? And then sequencing all the way up. I think there's 24 vertebrae. So then we're counting. Sometime we put some macaroni and cheese, little cups over there and ice cream, because thinking about calcium and healthy bones. So then they'll put like little small bones in and act like they're feeding the skeletons. Because we have a skeleton that stands up about their size also. So they've named him Skelly. And so they're pointing to his femur and his ulna and his radius. And it's just like, you know, this is, as a teacher, and then just looking at my just beautiful black babies, it is excellence. It is excellence. And I will just sit back and watch. And I've had coworkers say, they don't even know we're here. They are just so engaged in the learning and just moving freely. We don't have, for one of the first year, we don't have center charts. They just go. And I was a little concerned, like, oh, I don't know, we're going to have to cry. And it took a minute and they just moved. They know two people per center, two students per center. If there's somebody else there, then you just wait, you might ask them, but it's just a free space because that's how we are in the real world. We're just moving about. You don't say two, you know, there can only be 10 people in this aisle at the grocery store. You just know if you see a lot of people, you know what, let me go get my stuff in the produce section and I'll come back. So, you know, teaching a lot of life skills and incorporating a lot of those standards and, you know, objectives into the centers and into the learning.
Now, it's interesting. I just, when you said that, you know, I love kind of that transparency of letting go of even more of the control and the, I don't know about this. I'm not sure what to think. And I'm reminded of, you know, there's a mindset to all of this as a teacher of letting go of the control, of being bold, taking creative risk taking. And so I'm curious, as kind of a final question, what are some of the mindsets that teachers need to have themselves as they're designing the spaces and the learning opportunities for students so that they can truly have that creative classroom?
Sure. And I think this is one of your philosophies that everybody is creative. Yeah, that's the first thing. And you hear so many, you know, especially when they see spaces like mine, like, oh my good, I just don't have a creative gene. I can't do any. And some of this just takes, honestly, sometimes you got to put some work in. So doing some research and looking at, first, you know, if you're talking about the creative side of things, just, you know, I like to study just different papers and different textures. What looks good, then, you know, you tie in emotions and moods and thinking about, you know, how a space looks if you're trying to create a very calming and relaxed space. Because especially even for, you know, some high schoolers who, you know, they're doing a lot of writing and sometimes they just want a space where they can chill. You know what I mean? So really studying and looking at those things, but then also I think the best way to do it, no different than students, is to jump in and try and see what works. Try just one project at a time. I'm going to create, you know, just find, let's start with the library area and see, you know, what I can do and how I can hook this up and see how the children respond to it, see how others respond to it, because adults too. They love coming in my space. You know what I mean? So this is not just for children. You look and see what it does for everyone. And there's a reason when people say, you know, I just love your class. Just calming. And we have a lot going on. We teach early childhood. So a lot of colors and a lot, but there's still that balance. And kind of, there's a reason I do this for more than just my students. I do it for the entire school community. When folks say, I just need to come in and take a break. So I have a little something for everyone because it's bigger than just calling yourself a creative teacher. We know teaching in general, we're usually looking to impact more than just our kids, usually their families. And then, like I said, we're at the school all day. So now I've built and established these relationships with my coworkers. So by the time we leave home, we have impacted a number of lives and a number of people have poured into ours also.
I love it. Well, I also know that you won the 2022 DC Teacher of the Year. And I'm curious, as you think about that, you know, winning the award, kind of having a little bit of a platform, what are some things that you are hoping to advocate for in terms of classroom practices and the teaching practice as a whole?
Sure. As far as teaching practice, wellness, we know, you know, what is happening within education right now and the state of education and educators. So I am very solutions based. And like I said, I played a lot of sports growing up. So there's a bit of, you know, don't quit within me, like, you know, keep going, get the job done. And I know everybody doesn't have that. And I don't feel like you should. You shouldn't have to just, you know, take all the dumping. But I know what I can offer. So, you know, I've reached out to folks who, one of my friends, nationally certified health and wellness coach, she's made a 7-minute mindfulness meditation for teachers. And, you know, right now I'm partnering with different restaurants, just emailing and calling any restaurants and doing Teacher Tuesdays. Dunkin' Donuts, they're giving free donuts and coffee to teachers this Tuesday. You know, this restaurant is going to give us 30% off. So, no, I cannot get you more money. That's going to take a little more time for folks to, you know, shift how they think teachers should be paid. But I can help with some of your costs, hopefully, or bring you a little bit of joy if I can. So that's as far as teachers go. And as far as the classroom, I'm with you. I'm a creative and I do hope and feel that teachers would do their best to bring some level of creativity into the classroom space. I think if I taught high school or middle school, my classrooms would look very similar to how they look in my early childhood and kindergarten classes, because the middle schoolers will come down and play with all of my children's. Yeah, so that's how you know. So yes, yeah. There is a lot of work to be done, a lot of writing, a lot of, you know, technology usage with some of those older grades. But boy, oh boy, I want you to walk into your classroom and just be in awe, be excited to be in that space because it looks good, it smells good. You tap into all the senses when you walk in that room.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for being on this podcast. It was an honor to have you and just to have you share all the wisdom that you have.
Thank you, John, so much. I really enjoyed it. I hope to be back soon just to chat with you.
All right. So again, that was Dominique Foster. I hope you got as much out of that conversation as I did. I really enjoyed getting a chance to chat with her. And again, just kind of getting that story from someone who's currently in the system, currently a current classroom teacher who has amazing creative ideas. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever it is that you get your podcasts? Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.